Open your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 6, please. All right, let's stand together. Verse number 6. We're going to start here and we'll come back to the beginning of the chapter later on. Verse 6, go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, that's the Old Testament way of saying snooze. Five more minutes. Now you're speeding through traffic, killing people like me because you're late. So a little sleep, a little slumber, hit the snooze button one more time. A little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. In chapter 5, just a review from last week, we saw that the simple son was admonished to consider the end at the beginning, and especially in matters related to the opposite sex, because few things can mess up a young man's life early on, like getting involved with a bad girl or a bad woman. Few things can mess up a young lady's life quite as much as getting involved with the wrong young man. Few things can mess up a middle-aged man's life as much as getting involved with the wrong woman or an old man's life. A bad woman can really mess your life up. And so especially though when you're young and simple and we know the problems of youth. And so it's important for a young person in particular to set some goals towards family life and purity, not instant gratification and of the desires of the flesh. And so chapter 5 contrasted the strange woman and the good wife. And as I mentioned last week, it's a good illustration of folly and wisdom. The strange woman offers instant gratification and no responsibility. That's foolishness. Foolishness says here, have instant gratification with no responsibility, but the end will be bitter and shameful. And so our point last week was to consider the end in the beginning. The good wife represents wisdom because she represents delayed gratification responsibility. You know, getting married means taking a lot of responsibility. But a good marriage is the best in the long run for everyone involved, for husband, wife, and kids, and society. But just in a practical sense, it's wise for young people to desire the right relationships, to seek out at the right time a good spouse, to settle into family life, and avoid the paths of adultery, unfaithfulness, and sexual sin. In other words, your life will be immeasurably happier when you have a clear conscience about your past and a good marriage and a happy home life. Amen? That's what we want, but as we've discussed many times, you can have good intentions, a good desire, and take the wrong pathway. You're not going to get there by going that way. And so you have to, as young folks especially, to not only see, I'd like to have a wife or a husband and 2.5 kids and a white picket fence and a dog and a cat, but if you don't follow the right pathway, you will not end up in the right destination. Now, chapter 6 begins with advice to a young man in the area of business, finances, and personal responsibility. I can already hear people snoring. Personal responsibility, business, and finances. I thought we came to church. Yes, but the book of Proverbs has a lot to say about these things. And that's your first set of blanks there, number one. The area of business, finances, and personal responsibility. I've said many times that the only thing worse than having to handle money is not having any money to handle. I hate balancing checkbooks. I hate working with budgets. I hate figuring up sums. The only thing worse than that is trying to figure out how to pay for things you can't afford. And so... as much trouble as it is to balance that thing out and live within a budget and say no to yourself, it's a lot better than not having any money because you're going to need money. And so the book of Proverbs is certainly going to have a lot to say about our business, finances, and personal responsibility. Now, everyone is involved in business. The problem is that people tend to want to be involved in other people's business and not their own. It's amazing how many people have called and texted me about Lighthouse Baptist Church all of a sudden that haven't talked to me in years, trying to find out some gossip. And they're not finding any gossip out. If I don't talk to you regularly, I'm not going to start talking to you now about things.
But everyone's a lot of people are interested in other people's business. Four words make your life better: mind your own business. And a lot of folks don't mind their own business, but they sure are experts on other people's business. Now, I personally have way too much on my plate to be concerned about anything else at this particular time. And I think it'd be good if everyone was that busy and just focused on stewarding their own treasures and their own opportunities. Some people are good at taking care of their business and other people are lousy at it, which is another way of saying that some are wise and some are foolish. Your next blank there, number two, your life is your business. Are you taking care of business? Your life is your business. It's not the government's business. It's not somebody else's business unless you're married. Then, of course, that two are one. But your life is your business and you need to take care of business because that's your life. If you don't take care of your life, then what are you going to live in? I mean, that's the simple thing. You know, I've told the story about the man who was a contractor. He had one last house to build for his company, and he just wanted to retire. So he made a sloppy, cut all the corners, and just didn't do a very good job. And then the day was completed. The owner of the company said, "After all your years, we're presenting you with this house as your house for 25, 30 years of service." And he has to live now with the decisions and the cut corners and the sloppiness of his work. So we don't want to live in a life that's not worth living in. So we want to be wise so that we can enjoy life, amen, and have some happiness and have some peace and have some contentment. All of that is possible when we follow the path of wisdom. Now, we're going to study the first 11 verses of chapter 6 tonight. And as in much of Proverbs, there's a surface level of truth, and then there are some layers of truth under this. And the surface level, verses 1 through 11, there's two lessons. One is you should avoid co-signing loans. Right? The second is you should be industrious like the ant. Okay? And so those two main lessons we're going to discuss this evening. Another level on that might be the difference between delayed gratification and instant gratification. This guy needs a loan and he needs me to co-sign because he's not willing to save up and wait until he's ready to get the loan. He wants the instant gratification on my credit. That's the problem. Whereas the ant puts off gratification, saves up, lays aside for the winter months, and therefore does not starve when winter comes. That's wisdom. That's delayed gratification. Not just partying now when I have things I need to prepare for in the future. All right, so number one, the wise man avoids foolish entanglements. Avoids foolish entanglements. Verse 1, my son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth, thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Now, what does this mean? What is surety? Well, surety means that I am going to guarantee someone else's loan. All right, so for example, my friend, say I have a friend that needs help like this. My friend needs a loan or wants a loan for whatever reason, and he goes to the bank and he wants to get a loan, but the bank says, no, we're not going to give you the loan. We don't think that you're a good risk. We're not sure we'll get our money back, but if you can get someone to co-sign with you, then we'll give you the loan. So that friend comes to me and says, well, I really need this, and if you can really help me out, if you'll just co-sign, I'll pay you back. And if I do that, if I strike hands, which means to basically sign the contract with the loan, with the stranger, which is the loan company or the lender, then I am saying, for example, say Aiden wanted to borrow $10,000 for something, all right? But the bank won't give him any credit. So he comes to me because he knows Brother Raspberry has good credit, and though he doesn't have much cash, he does have a house and collateral, that sort of thing. And so he persuades me to co-sign the $10,000 loan. Well, then he doesn't pay it. Guess who has to pay it? The guy who became surety for his friend. And so now I am stuck paying his debt. That's what co-signing means. It means that I will guarantee this loan will be paid if the other person does not. Okay, So number one blank there, this is a warning against co-signing a loan even for a friend. Now, this is a potential disaster waiting to happen. you know, before I just let my heart get involved and just make a dumb decision, maybe I should ask some questions with my brain, all right? Why can't my friend get a loan on his own? Why doesn't the loan company or the bank trust that he will repay? What do they see in his character that you do not want to see because you're his friend? Maybe your friend wants something that he really can't afford and just doesn't want to wait to get. Or maybe your friend is such a terrible steward that his poor financial habits, you're not going to lift him up. He's more likely to drag you down. Now, I can say, you know, there might be an example with your child. But even that, I think, is a dangerous thing. But I'm not going to, you know, your family's family. This is not talking about family, it's talking about a friend. But I'd much rather my kids just go ahead and work and save and get themselves to a position, build up their own credit where they can buy something outright on their own and not have to depend on their parents. That would be, I've never had to co-sign, or had anyone co-sign for me. And I think that's a better way. You know, I might take longer, might have to save up more and work harder and delay gratification, but I'd much rather, since I was 18 years old, almost 19, much rather stand on my own two legs and have hand-me-down furniture and old houses and old cars and at least know that I am working and providing and building my own credit score. So that's my opinion. You don't have to, you can disagree with me. It's not doctrinal when it comes to your children. But when it comes to a friend, you're setting yourself up for potential disaster. Now, look at Proverbs 11, verse 15. Proverbs 11, verse 15. Remember I said that the first nine chapters are a long lesson, and then you have all these other verses that back up things that are already mentioned in the long lesson. Verse 15 says, "He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it. He that hateth suretyship is sure." All right, so if you hate the thought of co-signing, you're on a more sure standing. Look at chapter 17, verse 18. Chapter 17, verse 18. "A man void of understanding striketh hands," that's signing the contract, "and becometh surety in the presence of his friend." Sounds like God is trying to warn us of something. Maybe there's some wisdom here. Okay. Going back to Proverbs 6 and verse 3. Now here's what Solomon says. He said, if you do this, now verse 3 said, "Do this now, my son, to deliver thyself when thou art come into the hand of thy friend. Go humble thyself and make sure thy friend. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter and as a bird from the hand of the fowler." What does that mean? That means if you get yourself into this, do whatever you have to get out. But honestly, how do you do that? I don't know. When you sign the contract, what are you going to do? It's a lot easier to think first and before you get yourself in a position where there is no easy way out, may not be any way out. It's just wisdom. Now, the deeper lesson here is a warning against foolish compassion. That's letter C. Foolish compassion. Number one, this is when your heart leads and you do not use your head. Okay. God gave us both. He intends us to use both. You don't want to just use your head and have no heart, but you also don't want to have all heart and no head. That fell flat. But it's true. You know. And so, this is where your heart leads and you don't use your head. Now, when we do, what we tend to do is, well, we either can't say no to people, or we feel sorry for someone, or we like to feel good about ourselves. Look what a good friend I am to help my friend out of their trouble. And so we feel good about ourselves and we can't say no, or we feel sorry for someone. But as much as I may want to help my friend, I have more responsibilities than just being a friend. Because I also have a wife and I have kids and I have parents and I have responsibilities that are more than just, you know, if I get tangled up in your mess, how's that going to affect her? How's that going to affect them? How's that going to affect what I can do for God? So I got to think about more than just, I can't say no, it makes me feel good about myself or I feel sorry for somebody. Okay. Now, furthermore, what sometimes seems like compassion or kindness is often no kindness at all. By co-signing, I'm not only risking my own name and credit and money, I may be underwriting and encouraging my friend's bad character. Why can't he afford it on his own? Maybe he's young and hasn't built up credit yet. Maybe he's too young for what he wants yet. Or maybe he needs to get his act together and the bank has gone through his records and they said he's a risk they don't want to take. Well, if they don't want to take the risk, why do I want to take the risk? Maybe he needs to get his act together. You know, some people need to get their act together. It's okay to acknowledge that. And to have compassion on people is one thing. To underwrite and help them to continue on in their bad character is another thing. While dragging yourself into it as well. That's not helping the man out of the ditch like the Good Samaritan. That's getting down. That's bringing food every day to the ditch and not helping the guy out. You know, so that's foolish. It's not even real compassion. It's just foolishness. That's why Proverbs warns us about this. Maybe he wants more than he can afford. Maybe he needs to buy something he can afford. Maybe he can't afford a new car and a car payment. Maybe he needs to drive an old beater that has no air conditioning. I have. If you can't afford a car payment, you don't need to have a new car. Shock. You need to go buy one for $1,500. Well, actually, cars now. Ridiculous how expensive used cars are now. You need to buy one for $2,000 and drive it for a year and then trade it in or sell it and buy a $2,200 car and drive it for... I mean, you can't just lock yourself into a $20,000 car payment paying high interest rates and expect other people to help you pay for that. Maybe he can't afford it because it's not God's will for him to have it. And God's telling the bank to say no, and here you come along and get involved. Maybe he has bad character. Maybe he is a bad character. Maybe he wastes his money. Maybe he gambles. Maybe he has addictions. Maybe he's just plain old lazy. Maybe he's irresponsible. Getting that loan won't help him nearly as much as learning to have good character and delay gratification and take steps that will build his character and build his credit and get him to the place where he can afford to do the things that he wants to do. Maybe the loan is just an attempt to get instant gratification without having to put in the work, the saving, and the self-denial that's required to earn it on his own. So he wants to tap into your blood, sweat, and tears and your savings and your earning and your good name. So having a soft heart is good, but not in combination with a soft head. You know, we need to learn to say no sometimes. We need to learn to say, you can't afford this sometimes. You need to say no. You need to get your act together sometimes. And I know you're thinking, oh, preacher, well, like preachers like you do stuff like that. And that's fine. But you need to think twice before you get yourself entangled with someone else's character problems because it'll just drag you down. You're not likely... There may be a chance you may help someone up, but it's also a big chance they will drag you down. And God put this in black and white for a reason. So, I like to feel like I'm a pretty good person too, but you know what? It's not going to be worth it to do something foolish. Now, if you really insist, just to show you that there are options on the next page, if you really insist, however, on helping someone out, then, number one, give him or lend him the money outright. Do not involve yourself with the stranger. The stranger is the loan company or the lender. You say, well, I can't afford to give him that money. Then you can't afford to co-sign. That's like you should never borrow something you can't replace. Because if you damage it or break it, what are you going to do? And then if you can borrow it, or if you can buy it, go buy your own. I hate borrowing things. I'm always terrified to borrow anything. I'm afraid, what if I break this? I mess it up. Then I'm responsible for it. Maybe I can't afford it. But if you can't afford to just loan someone money or give him money, then maybe you can't afford to co-sign it either. And but you can say, you know what, brother, you need $100, you need $200. I mean, I can't imagine someone taking a loan out for something that small. But I can help you with that. You can pay me back in 6 months. You can pay me back in 3 months. Not even any interest on it. Or I'm just going to give it to you because I'm your friend. But number two, if you do that, be prepared to lose the money and the friendship. is money divides. Generally speaking, and obviously when you say generally speaking, there are exceptions that prove the rule. Generally speaking, it's not good for friends to be in business together, because that will bring unnecessary friction, especially when you are the lender, because the borrower is servant of the lender. No one likes to be their friend's servant. And then when they don't pay you back and they start making excuses, that's when things really get bad. And so better just to go ahead and give it. If you're going to give it, just give it. And say, all right, if you can pay me back in 6 months, but in your own mind, you better be thinking, that money's gone. Or your friend's gone or something. So that's just advice. You can take it for what it's worth. It's right here in black and the white. Make sure that you don't strike hands with strangers. And so that's one key aspect of having good business. You've got to, you can't be foolish. You can't be, let compassion lead you into doing unscriptural things. Number two, the second part of this is the ant who works for the future. We already read verse 6, but God said, go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Now, what's a sluggard? I love that word, sluggard. It's like slothful. Ever seen a sloth? That's what a sloth does. That's a sloth in fast forward. Sloths are great. Sloths are amazing. And a sluggard. You ever seen slugs? It's kind of inch long. Well, a sluggard means, a sluggard actually comes from a Latin, the Latin slug and ard means slow kind. It's a person habitually lazy, idle, and inactive, a drone. All right, this is a lazy person. They don't do anything if they can get their mommy or daddy to do it for them. They can play hard, but you don't expect them to work hard. I've seen this many times with kids and young folks. Boy, they're so tired of doing their chores and stuff. You want to play football? Oh, boy, they're out. Man, they're out. They've suddenly got that burst energy, you know. But when it's time to do their chores, boy, I'm so tired. It's time to go play. You know, and so don't be that way. Be a hard worker. You know, just if you're doing your chores, do them with some energy. Get them done fast. You know, going slow and being lazy just drags out the process and makes you more unhappy. And so if you have a chore to do, just get it done fast. Then you'll have more time to do the other stuff you want to do. But don't get in the habit of shirking your responsibilities and being lazy about your tasks and lazy with your chores. Do them with some energy. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. And, you know, one thing that'll help you is if you look at your chores, instead of always looking at it like, oh, I got to do these chores, just look at it and say, I'm going to get this done so I can do other things I want to do. Because you'll spend half an hour doing a chore like this when you could have had it done in 10 minutes and had 20 minutes to do something else. So you're not being smart in addition to being lazy. You're also wasting time. You're failing in time management, work ethic, and smartness. So it's just better just to dig in there, get the job done. And because if you're a kid, you don't get paid by the hour, do you? So get the job done and move on to other things. Don't be a lazy person. That's something we have to learn when we're young, and it becomes a good habit that'll help us throughout our entire lives. But boy, you get someone who's an adult who's already learned to be a sluggard, and it is hard to light a fire under them. I tell you, once that is ingrained into their character, you don't want to work with them. You don't want them working for you. You don't want to be married to them. You don't want to be with, I mean, you will end up working 1.5 times harder when you are yoked up with a sluggard. So God tells us, if you want to take care of business, then go to the ant. The ant has more wisdom in his tiny little head than a sluggard, even if a sluggard manages to have a bachelor's degree in ethnic studies. Now, God designed these creatures for our learning. So I just imagine God creating everything ants were on the sixth day, right? Creeping? Yes, so ants were on the sixth day. And I can just see God speaking forth, and here come all the creeping things, and there's the little ant. And God had designed and programmed those ants to colonize and to work together and do the little ant chores and stuff. And, you know, and as much as you may hate them, in your yard, they're still pretty amazing animals. There's just evidence of God's design. And why did God design that? To mess up picnics? I mean, they have a purpose, right? And part of that purpose is for us to go to them and learn how to be good workers. Now, what is wise about the ant? There's two things here, and I've heard a lot of sermons about ants that go into all the zoological stuff about them, but really there's just two things here that Proverbs points out. Number one, the ant supervises herself. That's your first blank there. The ant supervises herself. Verse 7, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler. Now, we've all watched ants. Maybe you stepped on them. And you see these ants running around all over the place, and they're always going in a line, going somewhere. And isn't it amazing? You can drop you can eat a chicken leg and drop it in the ground, and like 10 minutes later, it's covered with ants. It's like, how do the ants know that? Isn't that amazing? I mean, they must have like some super ability. You know, sense of smell. I mean, I look at them, I don't see noses. How do those ants, where do they, I mean, all of a sudden it's like chicken leg. Let's go! And they're all over the tree. So, I don't forgot where I was on that, but they don't need to be supervised. So you look at these ants, and you don't see a bunch of ants walking around carrying leaves and chicken bones and stuff. And there's one ant, you know, leaning against a tree with a cup of coffee and a hard hat on, you know, barking, hurry up, guys, hurry up, guys. Let's see one ant out there with a blueprint spread out on a table and say, all right, guys, you need to go do this, you need to go do that. They have a queen, but the queen basically just lays eggs. I mean, she's not out there directing anything. It's not like she meets the ants in the morning and says, all right, guys, here's our to-do list. Team meeting, go ants. Keep your eye out for chicken legs. Amen. I mean, these ants, they just, and I know that they've studied them. They finally give out these little chemicals and stuff when they pass each other and they touch their little antennas and stuff. And it's amazing how God designed that. But you don't see a supervisor out there cracking a whip. You don't even see lazy ants. You just see them all pretty much going full speed ahead, don't you? And so that's what God is teaching us, that the ant supervises herself. So the question is this: how long will you need to be supervised? Well, kids need to be supervised. Amen. Kids need to be taught and trained, and teenagers need to be supervised less than children, but they need to be supervised. At least someone needs to know where they're at, what they're doing, and if they do something wrong, to correct them. But how long are you going to need a supervisor in your life telling you, do this, do this, do this, do this, when you know those are things you ought to be doing? The wise person does what he's supposed to do. Now, he may need to learn how to do it. He may every once in a while need some correction. The wise man loves correction. But he doesn't need to be constantly supervised and constantly reminded and constantly checked up on, because he has something called character. He's not a sluggard. He's a worker. He's someone who's responsible. He's someone who is a self-starter. This one thing alone would elevate anyone's life: to be a self-supervisor. I said this before, and I don't mean to use Joe as an illustration, but he's good at it, so it's a good illustration. But every Monday, Joe has to take the trash down the driveway. It's 100 yards down our driveway. He takes both trash cans down there before the trash man shows up, and the trash man likes to throw us a curveball every once in a while, so they got to be out there early, because most of the time we come by around 2, and then every once in a while I'll be there at 4:30 in the morning, you know, and it's like, well, he wasn't out there. And so on Monday, Joe, you hear the gravel out there as he drags the trash cans down there. Now, every once in a while, you'll forget. You know, and Nathan, you never forget anything? Come on now, I see. Yeah, you do. Okay. It's a guy thing, isn't it? I mean, he may oversleep on a Monday. Sunday's a long day. Just every once in a while, maybe once a year. And he'll forget. Joe's like, I want to argue that point, you know. But my point is this, though, that if I had to remind him every Monday or every other Monday or every third Monday, Joe, take the trash out, Joe, take the trash out, then I would come to the conclusion that Joe has bad character. that I have to constantly tell him to do what he knows he needs to do is not good character. To have to keep constantly reminding our children of this is your chore on this day, every week, constantly spanking them, correcting them, then that's poor character. Every once in a while, we all forget to take the trash out, but to constantly have to be told is a sign that we are not self-supervisors. We always need someone. Now, that's a small thing, taking the trash out, but see, one day Joe's going to be an adult, Joe's going to have jobs, and if Joe is a self-supervisor, he will eventually rise to being a supervisor over others. He won't always need someone over him telling him everything to do and checking up on him all the time. This is often the difference between a guy who has a career versus the guy that just has a job. This is the difference sometimes between the supervisor and the employee, that the supervisor has an inner supervisor and he listens to that inner supervisor and just does what he's supposed to do. It separates the guy who gives the orders from the one who has to take the orders. Okay. Now, I don't need a supervisor. Okay, I'm a pastor. Who's my supervisor? God. You know, God does not email me a to-do list every Monday. But I know Sunday's coming, Wednesday's coming, responsibilities are coming, things need to be done. And I have to make my own to-do list every day, and I check off the things as I get them done. And I know things that need to be done next month and 3 months from now and 6 months from now. And I just check them off and take care of them and do what I need to do. Because I don't need a supervisor. I'm a self-supervisor. I don't need someone to kick me out of bed. I can get out of my own bed. I don't need someone to get me started. I can start myself. And that's important for us. I go to Heartland, and all I needed them to do is I need to learn how to use the computer system, enter grades, enter attendance. What class do you want? What are the parameters of it? And then I wrote out 600 pages of notes over the summer because I knew that I needed them at the beginning of the semester. And I go in on Fridays, and I go to my little temporary office, and I set up my little laptop and set up my stuff, and I go in and I teach my class, and I go back in and enter all my information in the computer, and you know, no one has to check on me. Now, there are people that check things, obviously, especially when you're new, but they just kind of think, all right, you can take care of things. You know, here's what we need you to do, go do it. You see, that's the kind of character that you guys ought to desire to have, that you can be trusted with responsibilities and people know that you're just going to supervise yourself. And every once in a while, you may need a small correction, but most of the time, you're a self-starter, you're a self-motivator, you're a self-supervisor, and people can count on you to get jobs done. That's the ant, see? That's the ant. So take responsibility for your own life and your own actions. Don't be a slacker. Don't be a sluggard. See how the ant supervises herself and see how much she gets done. All right, number two, the ant takes responsibility for her future and the future of her colony. For her future and the future of her colony. Verse 8, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. Now, providing her meat in the summer means providing what we need today. I mean, you need things today. Amen? And so, you know, that's providing meat in the summer. I can't just put it all in savings. I actually have to buy groceries today, right? Won't do me good to have $1 million in the bank if I don't even have a can of baked beans in the pantry. I mean, so I have to, when I'm thinking about planning and stuff and budgeting and stuff, I've got to provide now what our basic needs are now, and I need to think about the winter months so that I have something set aside because those times are coming whether I want them to or not. And in the middle of the summertime, you may think, man, winter never get here. But I promise you, winter's going to get here. And you all know the Aesop's fable of the grasshopper and the ant, how the grasshopper just played all summer and fiddled and went to parties and stuff, and the ant just worked and worked and worked, and the grasshopper teased the ant, said, you're just stuck in the mud, you're no fun, all you want to do is work all the time, why don't you come to the party with me? And then when the winter came and the grass all got covered with ice, you know, the grasshopper came along to the ant's house and said, please, can I have some of the food that you've laid aside? Now, in the original Aesop's fable, back before we became a bunch of wimps, the ant said, no, go starve to death. And they did. I think in the modern version, the government steps in and puts them on health care and gives the grasshopper food stamps and everything. But in the original fable, the moral of the story is, hey, if you don't lay aside for the future, you're going to starve to death. Yeah. And so the aunt not only provides for today, she takes responsibility for her future, not only her future, but she's part of a colony. She's part of a large number of ants. And just as I'm part of a family and I'm part of a church and part of a society, but I'm primarily responsible for my family. And so I've got to not only provide what we need today, I've got to think about what I'm going to need tomorrow. Now, the problem in America is not a lack of resources or opportunity, but a lack of wisdom. We don't want to delay gratification. Young people want everything their parents have in their 60s, but they want them by the time they're 26. Now, my parents have nice stuff now. They have a nice house. They just paid off. They have beautiful furniture. They have beautiful paintings on the walls, and they have collected these for 40, 50 years. When I was a kid, we didn't have nice stuff like that. You ought to see some of our pictures from the 80s. So much orange. Did everyone have an orange quilted comforter? Oh, my goodness. Ugly furniture. You know, and my parents would, you know, they'd bring back this from Spain. They'd bring back this from Puerto Rico, you know, in the military time. And, you know, and they'd go to some place and they'd buy this and then they'd buy that. And over the years, they collected some pretty nice stuff. And then, you know, they wore out furniture, got the kids out, and upgraded to nicer furniture. And now they have nice stuff. They're 74, 75 years old. But man, some people are 27 years old and they want everything now. And they're going in up to here in debt to try to have it now. What are they going to do when winter comes? People live on a razor's edge because they don't save for the future. They want everything now. They get themselves into credit card debt and buy cars they can't afford, houses they can't afford. But remember this, economies change all the time. To think that, man, we're in a boom, it's never going to end, is foolish. Every boom busts. Every bust can turn again into a boom, but it may take a while. Look how things changed in our country this year. Had one of the most exciting economies in the history of our country, and then boom, gone. And how many people were not ready? Had nothing set aside. We're living on that razor edge. You know how many people cannot even go a week? Can they even go 2 weeks without income? I mean, it's hand to mouth. And it's not always, I mean, this isn't the Great Depression. It's not always because they don't make a good income. It's because they don't control their spending. And it just snowballs because they want instant gratification. Folks, economies change. We need to be really have common sense. And I'm reminded of the story of the young man that complained about his dad all the time. Dad's just he's a penny pincher. He never spends any money, never lets us do anything. I need to go borrow $50 from him, you know, because he actually has money. I wonder why he has money, because he doesn't live like you. So, and I don't have a lot of money. I don't have cash, but a lot of cash. But we live within our means. I know I can't afford a new car right now. We're talking about buying two used cars paid off in full right at the bank. That's how we need to live. It may be a 15-year-old Mustang, but at least it'll be a Mustang. 6 feet. Top down, Mrs. Raspberry next to me, Lulu in the back. Maybe Lulu next to me, Mrs. Raspberry in the back. Lulu with goggles on. I may not have money, but I know how to have fun. But I'm not beholden to anybody. I'm not in debt to anybody. And so foolishness is always short-sighted. We can lose jobs. We can have health problems. Unexpected expenses can come out of nowhere anytime. And so the aunt not only prepares for now, living for today or in today, but also what am I going to do tomorrow? How will I handle it? You know, am I setting anything aside? And taking responsibility for the future. Verse 9, I actually thought this would be a short lesson. It is not a short lesson. Verse 9, how long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Lazy people love to sleep. That's letter B. Lazy people love to sleep. But to be successful in life and accomplish something, you have to get out of bed. There may be times when you don't get a lot of sleep. Guess what? You'll live. You'll live. I told our class on Friday, I said, the world is run by tired people. It's time to grow up. We're all tired. Everybody's tired. If you're not tired, you're probably tired of being lazy. So then in verse 10, you had a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands. To sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. And this is used again in Proverbs 24 when he says, I went by the field of the slothful and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. Lo, it was all grown over with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall there was broken down. And then he quoted again, yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveled. Lazy people let everything fall apart. It takes work, that's your next blank, it takes work to have a life in good order. See this field, and it's not like they don't need him, and that's his livelihood, but he's not taking care of it. He's a farmer, but he's not taking care of his fields. It's just all run over. Well, what's he going to do? That's his source of supply. But he doesn't care. He's too lazy to get out of bed and do what needs to be done. Over time, the lazy person's life becomes a discouraging mess of incomplete tasks that looks like something Hercules would have to do. And it's just a bunch of little things that have compounded and turned to rubble. That's why one of the most common pieces of advice for young, especially young men that are depressed, step one, clean your room. Serious. And I have seen on Facebook, I follow a couple of groups like that, and I've seen where guys have posted, you know, I cleaned my room today, and they posted before and after picture. And I mean, there are pizza boxes, there is trash, there is dirty clothes. I mean, these are guys in their 20s and 30s, piles of stuff. It's despicable, disgusting. And then they clean their room and they get everything thrown away and everything straightened up and they make their bed. And they say, I can't believe how much better I feel about myself just because I clean my room. Well, what happens? You leave the pizza box, leave your underwear out, leave your socks out, leave stuff out. And it just starts piling up and piling up and piling up because we don't take care of the little things. And frankly, it's because we're lazy. We're lazy. We'd rather put it off, rather than put in the little bit of effort every day to make sure that things stay in good shape. So the lazy person's life becomes a discouraging mess of incomplete tasks. So this is just wisdom. It's just plain and simple. Don't co-sign with people that will be a risk. Go to the ant, consider her ways. She supervises herself and she prepares for her own future. I'd say that's pretty good advice.